Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to Formative Media with me, Christian Spicer, the show that celebrates the media that inspires, influences, and defines us. You can support the show and get ad-free episodes and access our bonus show, Zeitgeist, over at patreon.com/formativemediashow. Our patrons are truly the reason why this show will continue. Consider becoming one. And of course, you can always email the show at formativemediashow@gmail.com. On today's show, actor, writer, comedian, and former artistic director of the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Los Angeles, Alex Berg, or just Berg. Berg joins us to talk Gary Larson's The Far Side.
It felt, whether or not this was the case, it felt like something I discovered on my own. And so it felt a little bit more special to me than some of these other things that have been introduced to me. In the way that I still do, like if I discover an author on my own, I feel a sense of like ownership or like kinship, or if I hear about a band, like not because I got recommended it by Stereo Gum or Pitchfork, but because I was into another band on that same label and then I got a label sampler and then found like one track and then discovered this whole thing, like I feel more of a sense of ownership over that. And I think Far Side was like that for me as a kid. And I think it really shaped my sense of humor at the point in time when it was most malleable, and its shaping was so subtle and so thorough that it was invisible to me until I was like a fully formed adult.
Berg also played the character Blodgett in FX's excellent show Terriers, which is still available to stream on Hulu and Disney Plus, and performs long form improv with his troupe Convoy, now in their third decade of making comedy magic out of thin air. So, let's get to The Far Side. You are bringing The Far Side to the show today as your piece of media. And before we really dive in on that, we're talking The Far Side, like the whole kit and caboodle, or are there like specific moments, or it's just The Far Side?
I think it's, you know, the platonic ideal of The Far Side, which I'm not as plugged into the funny pages now as I was when I was a kid and newspapers still existed.
The Far Side is a comic, or cartoon strip, if you will, by Gary Larson that ran from January 1980 to January 1995, when Gary Larson retired as a cartoonist. It was carried by 1,900 daily newspapers and translated into at least 17 different languages. It was on t-shirts, coffee mugs, calendars. It was monoculture. But it also still felt personal, like somehow it was talking just to you.
But it felt to me all the way through high school that The Far Side was just inescapable. It was like air. Everybody had a Far Side t-shirt, mug, wall calendar, day calendar. Like It was everywhere. And I had a really hard time choosing between Far Side and Calvin and Hobbes, which were both very formative for me. Calvin and Hobbes turned me into Calvin as a child. Far Side shaped my kind of like adult humor sensibilities. And so that's why I kind of teed there. But yeah, The Far Side.
to admit something personal. I love The Far Side, but I always felt too stupid for it, if that makes any sense. Like,
it's a pre-internet XKCD.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's I have it with me. No one listening will be able to see it, but I assure you I'm holding the complete Far Side.
You can hear the strain in his voice. That's how you know you're holding it, as you lift it.
You can hear this middle-aged man lifting a heavy book. He's like, oh God, I brought it with me. In the Far Side, there's part of one, it's just nice to have all the Far Side comics together. But two, the complete Far Side has a couple of really great essays sort of feathered in there from Gary Larson and also Gary Larson's editor at Andrews McMeel, who, you know, was kind of the first audience for a lot of these. Mm-hmm. And was therefore tasked with explaining the gag in many of them. And they're just so niche. Like, some of these things are so goddamn niche. And for me as a kid, you know, 90% of it went over my head. I was just like, hell yeah, that's a cow and that's funny, you know, or whatever. As an adult, I think what I love about it is it doesn't care if you get the joke. Gary Larson is writing these things to make Gary Larson laugh. And
interesting,
because there's still a ton of these I don't get. You know, like, they're not pop culture references I don't get. They're just like weird niche. Like, yeah, I guess if you know about like this particular way that shellfish, you know, like migrate, then this one makes sense. And if not, you move on to the next one. You know, there's still a ton I don't get. But the ones I get, they hit so goddamn hard, you know?
Yeah. For me, it's, you know, the School for the Gifted and Talented push-pull door one.
Yes.
Like, that's the classic that I think of all the time. And then, but at the same time, I feel like reading them in the papers when they came out or digitally, or I think the reason they work so well as the calendar is that they're single. For people that don't know, The Far Side is a single panel comic. That's all it ever is. As far as I know, there's never been a multi-panel Far Side. They're all, those are the perfect little day calendars where each day is its own complete comic. But I feel like I laugh so hard at that, you know, School for the Gifted and Talented comic, but I also feel like I'm that kid when I turn the page to the next day and I'm like, oh, I don't get this. And I'll flip through like 10 more days.
Yeah.
Okay, to quickly clear one thing up, while almost every single Far Side comic fits into the traditional single panel frame you're likely thinking of when you picture a Far Side comic, Gary Larson did make multi-panel Far Sides, but they were just panels divided up in that classic one panel frame you're thinking of. So they'd still work as a t-shirt or daily calendar, etc. But yes, he did make comics with more than one technical panel. Also, I said almost every single Far Side fits into the traditional single panel frame because Gary did break from this well-established format for one and only one Far Side comic, the last one, a two-panel comic where Gary himself comes home from Oz. Oh, and regarding the idea that a Far Side comic might need to be explained, here's a fun scene from the sitcom Cheers that you'll see I wasn't alone. Oh, wait.
What's the matter? What?
I don't get the Far Side.
Woody, hand it over here. Come on, let's have a look. Okay, Wood. Now, you see here in the first panel, cows are standing on their hind legs, right? The second panel, when the car goes by, they're acting like normal cows.
See, the idea here is, Wood, that, you know, cows only act like cows when we're around. Other times they act like people. You know, does that help you clear it up a little bit for you?
Just meant I don't get the Far Side in my newspaper at home, but thanks for treating me like a one-year-old.
Also, it's so funny to be like, you remember when you wouldn't know what day it was and you didn't have a phone? And so you had a pile of dead trees to tell you which day, you know. But when I was a kid, when I was in high school, I lived in the attic of my parents' house. And so that whole, like, you know, it's like an old house, and this whole like ancient stairwell going up to the attic had these blank walls. And I would tape up my favorite Far Sides from the day calendars until the whole thing was plastered with Far Sides. So to get into or out of my room, I just had to walk through this, like, you know, gallery of the choicest Far Side day calendar pulls.
And Berg wasn't alone when it came to taping up their favorite Far Sides. The idea of that was so prevalent that it even made its way onto an episode of The Simpsons in season 21's episode Once Upon a Time in Springfield.
No other nuclear plants let their employees tape Gary Larson cartoons on their workstations, but here at Cap City Nuclear, you can actually see Gary Larson.
Gary Larson, I thought you retired.
I was retired until I got the call from Capital City Nuclear offering me the chance to be the in-house cartoonist at a nuclear plant.
Gary, why don't you whip up an instant classic for my friends here?
You got it, Gator.
I don't get it.
It was just, it was, maybe this is why I thought it was everywhere, is because for me it was. But, you know, the nice thing is, like, I don't get that one. There's another one over here. Like, I would just sit on the stairs and look at this wall of Far Side.
I love, instead of a Berg, this is your life, when people would come up to your room, it would be like, Berg, this is your sense of humor. You're just inundated with your comedic sense of humor as you would walk into the space.
Yes, for sure.
Do you carry that with you, the idea of surrounding yourself with the things that you think are funny? Or do you think that was more a vestige of youth and pinup posters and taping things on the wall? Or do you still find yourself looking to surround yourself with the things that you love?
I definitely surround myself with the things that I love. But
not
I
people,
think,
by the way. I don't mean that. I don't mean
that. No. There's no love in my life. I'm a materialist through and through. You know, I love two things, crypto investments and Lambos, and that's it. You know, and NFTs, three things, and NFTs, because that's perfect. How I surround myself with the blockchain. But no, I mean, when I was young, it felt like there was, and part of this, I think, is youth and figuring out your personality and then really not knowing how to do that with any nuance. You know, it wasn't just that I had like a Far Side up I liked. It was like had to be the whole wall. You know, it wasn't just that I would quote Monty Python occasionally. I had my parents' AOL account so that every sound effect was like a Monty Python Holy Grail quote or something. You know, like just this kind of turning it up to 11 of youth personality thing. You know, and now I don't surround myself with funny things. I surround myself with science things. You know, it's like I'm looking at a poster with a bunch of whales on the wall over here. Like my bookshelf is all like weird little like natural history tchotchkes and stuff. I have like science tattoos, and you know, I think tattoos are basically the equivalent of like, hey, I hung up a cool picture I like, you know, but just on your body. That's reductive. They're much more than that to a lot of people, but I think of myself in that slightly condescending way. But yeah, so when I was a kid, I think it was like, I need people to know that I also like and get Far Side. You know, I'm going to wear the t-shirt. I'm going to print out a really good one and slip it into the plastic cover of my binder for school. People need to be aware that I'm into it.
Yeah. When I was in school, I had my laptop out. I think it was in law school at the time, still doing it. You know, not a kid, but still doing it. I think it was like old school laptops where you didn't have a lot of screensaver options, you know, as we're going to sit there. And so I think I had the scrolling text, and I think, man, I'm not able to pull the band. I'll find it. But it's like a pop punk, maybe the movie Life. And it was just, if my mind's a weapon, then my heart's the extra clip.
So good. It's so good.
I'm going to Google it real quick. Hold on.
Great.
Yeah, there it is. It is the movie Life from the song Jamestown, which is a great song. But like even in law school, that was like, and no one really saw it, but it was also just like comfort food for me, like chicken soup for the soul. Like as I'm just like through con law or whatever, then that would scroll by and I'd be like, hell yeah, that's who I am.
That's so funny. I love that. That's great.
So I want to back up a little bit. Far Side, comedic sensibility, all of that stuff. You're one of the funniest people I know. And
hell yeah.
Some of
our, take that, everyone else.
I know very few people. It's a very small circle.
Yeah.
And I feel privileged to have been able to see some of your work here in Los Angeles at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. And I remember the first time I saw you, and I don't know if it was a Convoy show. I don't know what show it was, but I remember the first time I saw you perform at UCB here in Los Angeles. And it was you and Fernie, and I don't know how many teams you guys were on together or if that meant it was one group or not. But I remember being so amazed by the magic trick. I almost didn't appreciate the humor, if that makes sense. You guys were doing long form improv, and I remember sitting there going, they are pulling everything back together. Nothing is wasted. And I almost found myself not laughing, but just like trying to see the matrix that I felt like you sure. guys could clearly see that was just going by all the rest of us. And I'm curious, kind of as you transitioned into doing comedy professionally, how much of this early I am the Far Side was a foundation for that or something that you would carry with you on stage to this idea that you mentioned for Gary Larson, like, I don't care if you laugh, I'm going to do something to make Fernie laugh, or I'm going to pull something back from later that's a reference that only I get about how starfish migrate or whatever. Do you think there is that foundational base, or do you think it was kind of just all a street sign pointing you in one direction, perhaps?
At one point, it wasn't conscious. And then when the Far Side Complete Edition was published, which I think was in 2005 or 2006, it was very shortly after the Calvin and Hobbes Complete Edition was published. At one point, I went and reread all the Far Side and was like, oh, this is what I've been unintentionally angling for with so much of my comedy. And I think something Gary Larson really excels at is taking a really absurd or heightened premise, you know, like there's a classic Far Side where it's the caption is the real reason the dinosaurs went extinct. And it's like a bunch of dinosaurs just sitting around smoking cigarettes, you know. And there's another one that comes to mind, probably just because I'm within the subgenre of Far Side that is prehistoric, you know, where it's a caveman presenting another caveman with a club and saying, I call this one the Thagomizer 2000, you know, like, and it's Gary Larson is very good at consistently finding these ways of taking these ridiculous premises and finding something very mundane about them that simultaneously deflates how ridiculous that premise is and heightens how ridiculous it is that I can relate to that because that's a thing we do. You know, like it's a very Gary Larson's viewpoint is so good at highlighting the absurdity of regular life by putting something mundane into irregular life.
Indeed, he would. There would be something so mundane and so recognizable in so many Far Side comics, but also something just that little bit twisted, a little dark. Here's a clip from a 1986 episode of 2020 that calls out that same dinosaur smoking comic and further highlights that perhaps slightly dark undercurrent in so many Far Side jokes.
Larson really holds a mirror up to life and a sort of a crack mirror.
I think what's wonderful about the humor is it tends to be a little bit on the dark side.
The cartoon is called The Far Side, and it takes a decidedly off-center look at life on this planet. Example, the real reason dinosaurs became extinct. A grinning Godzilla drives along in his car. The license plate reads, I-8 New York. Mother hen to sick chick. Quit complaining and eat it. Number one, chicken soup is good for the flu. And number two, it's nobody we know. Taboo subjects are part of the daily diet.
And I think it's that 1-2 punch of mundane reliability combined with some darkness that really helped Far Side connect with so many people. It was a reflection of life, but an honest one. Not a smoothed over glamour filtered take. I'd love to get your thoughts on intellectual humor and how it could maybe work alongside not blue collar, what's the, not pratfall, not physical, but like, I feel like what the Far Side did and what I think a lot of great long form improv can do as well is play in this space of an intellectual level, but then also not be afraid to do something very base.
Yeah.
Maybe it's physical comedy or whatever that thing would be. And I'm curious kind of your approach to comedy, where you see those, what you see that Venn diagram look like of like, oh, this is cerebral is maybe what I'm looking for. And this is Jackass.
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, doing long form improv, you're always kind of burning the most recent fuel in the tank. You know, if I'm reading a book about jellyfish, there's going to be a scene about jellyfish in that month's show, you know, or whatever. And that's just because it's top of mind. You know, I don't think that, I think one of the things that's tough about, like, you know, cerebral versus base humor is there's an inherent hierarchy people place on it that I think is not deserved. You know, like, I went and saw Jackass 5 a couple days ago, as of this taping. It's great. And I think for as much as, like, yeah, it's pretty base to watch Steve-O fire a ping pong ball out of his or whatever, it's also incredibly intelligent for Johnny Knoxville to be carried away on a stretcher after getting, you know, like, concussed by a bull and saying, like, that bull really hates magic, you know. But I think with Far Side, and certainly with the stuff I try to do, if your intellectual humor is just you showing off that you know some reference or something, that's worthless. You know, all that does is alienate an audience. If you're doing it to connect with, like, the other three people in the audience who get the reference, that's great. But you got to know that's like a sort of, it's fundamentally alienating. And I don't want to do that. But I think if you can have that stuff as enough of a mixture in your comedy that things feel a little highfalutin, then it makes the base stuff hit harder because we fundamentally tend to separate those two things into separate camps. So it's like, in the same way, I wouldn't ever want to watch a show or do a show for that matter that was just like deep cut references to some like arcane mythological creature or something, like, you know, without anything for anyone else to hang on to. I also wouldn't want to do a show that was just, hey, here's 10 funny sounding farts every 30 seconds. You know what I mean? Like, now, if you have a show where it's like, okay, hey, we're going to get a hydra and a manticore and someone's going to fart, and then we have to figure out who farted, going like, okay, so yeah, you know, like, it was a squeaker, so then maybe that makes it, you know, like, then all of a sudden it's like, well, now it's not really about the fart. It's not really about the, hey, I get this reference or I don't. It's you're kind of putting these two things together in a way where the fart makes the highfalutin stuff feel even more highfalutin because it's illustrating the distance. And the highfalutin stuff makes the base stuff feel kind of fresh and more surprising because you don't expect it in that context. Then those two things work together really well. And I think my favorite output of my own is when both of those things are happening simultaneously. We're doing the dumbest possible joke from the smartest angle, but you kind of need both. You know, it's like in psychology, there's a theory of humor called benign violation put forward by Peter McGraw at University Boulder. And the very short version of it is like, for there to be comedy, you need to have not only a violation, but it also has to be benign, right? Like, a loose tiger at a zoo is a violation that might hurt you. An empty cage at a zoo is too benign. There's nothing interesting there. But you put a tiger in a cage and all of a sudden you have this safe distance at which to experience this dangerous thing. And I think intellectual humor and you know, like, non-intellectual humor can work together in that same way, which again is, I think, something Far Side just is the ultimate goat at.
Here's a clip of Gary talking at UCLA about a couple of his cartoons, a family of cows with one calf giving bunny ears to the other, and one about a witch babysitter. It's the specificity of the details, though. Just someone who sees the world in such a crystal clear way.
The Holsteins visit the Grand Canyon. When I did this cartoon, I had so many people that told me they really liked it and how much they enjoyed it. But I never found anyone who ever saw the reason why I did it. And if you look at those two little calves in the foreground, one of them is doing this behind the other one's head. did get some negative feedback on this one. Now, let me get this straight. We hired you to babysit the kids, and instead you cooked and ate them both? Well, for me, when I did this, the focus of the humor in this is the word both, the emphasis on the word both. Like, well, one would be okay, but both.
The idea that everyone would laugh at a Far Side cartoon, but at the same time, Gary might be there thinking, yeah, but look at this one specific part. That's the thing. I love that idea so much, how there can be so many layers to something that might appear so simple at the outset. Okay, we'll be back with more Far Side and more Berg right after this quick ad break.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had OneNote, tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
I do want to get back to Far Side, but because I have you, and we've talked about this before, but I want to talk about it a little bigger, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
One of my favorite shows on television, and I loved it with my whole heart, and it's called Terriers on FX. People can find it now on Hulu, I believe. And I also am pretty sure that if you search like best shows on Hulu or best shows on FX, it's an all-time top 10 best show that FX has ever done. And this isn't just my opinion. I think this is the internet's opinion.
It's every 5 years, Alan Sepinwall will do a renewed plea to get it back on the air, which is wild. But yeah.
It was so good. Created by Ted Griffin and produced by Sean Ryan. Like
correct.
Sean's after The Shield. He does Terriers, I think. It's like his next thing. And it's been described as kind of a Batman and Robin style detective show, but with like the energy of The Dude, you know, if that makes if that's a appropriate description. Jumping in here on myself a bit to provide a more appropriate description. As described on Rotten Tomatoes, where the show has a 93% tomato meter and a 97% popcorn meter, Terriers. Former cop Hank Dolworth and his best friend Britt Pollock team up to open their own private investigation agency. They aren't letting a lack of licenses stand in their way, although they would prefer to avoid both danger and responsibility as they try to solve crimes. Terriers only lasted one season on FX back in 2010, but that just makes it an easy binge now via Hulu or Disney Plus or whatever. It was a show ahead of its time. And I'm curious what you were a man in the van, not the man in the chair, but kind of like people watched X-Files, you know, the geeks.
Yeah, Convoy was very expressly Ted's attempt to make the lone gunman on Terriers, like just one to one. He was like, I want the lone gunman. I want it to be you guys, you know.
And so that came out. Was he at a UCB show?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes. Ted was taking a improv 201 class that got out like, I think it was like a Thursday night class that got out at 10. And he was friends with the teacher and they went and got a drink and then came to a Convoy show. We didn't know this. And then a couple weeks later, we got a call from our agent that someone wanted to have a meeting with us at FX in Century City. And so we went down there and I remember that I had diarrhea so bad the day of the meeting, I almost didn't go. And at the time, Bernie and I were living together and he was like, buddy, he's like, if you can't go, that's okay. But like, you got to be there. I was like, I can rally. You know, it's like chugging Pepto-Bismol or whatever.
Farted, the Hydra? Which Alex farted in this meeting? Was it the Fernie?
Yeah,
or the
exactly. And we get there and some receptionist is like, oh, yeah, right this way, and leads us into like a lounge where they play the Terriers pilot for us. No one told us that's what we were doing there that day. They play the Terriers pilot for us. And then afterwards, Ted came out, Ted Griffin, and he was like, hey, I'm Ted. I saw you guys a couple weeks ago. Do you like the show? And we're like, yeah, it's fantastic. And he's like, do you want to be on it? And we're like, yeah. And he was like, okay. And then he wrote those. Not only Ted was so great to work with, not only did he write those parts for us, this is highly unusual for people who are, you know, like basically day players. He sent us the scene we were in and was like, hey, just if you want to do a pass and like tweak this so it sounds like you guys, go for it. If not, don't worry about it. We were like, absolutely. Then like a couple weeks later, before we were filming our first scene, he texted me and was like, hey, I was just going to have you guys be Fernie Berg and Fassin in the show. Do you want that or do you want like character names? And I was in the car with Alex Fernie on the way back from a show in San Diego at the time. And I was riding shotgun and I was like, what do you think? And he's like, nah, we should have our own names. And he let us pick our own names. And so in the show, my character is Blodgett because that's the psych majors building at the campus where we went to school. Fernie's character is Swift because that was the history majors building. And Todd's character is Gunt because it was the ugliest name we could come up with that we thought would get past FX. And so when we got to set that first day, the way Todd found out his character's name was Gunt was they had to print it out names on our trailers. And he was like, oh, Blodgett, like on campus, and Swift, like on campus. He's like, what's Gunt? And Fernie and I were like, oh, I think that was the art history building. And Todd's like, it was not the art history building. We're like, I think that some building on campus was Gunt. You know? So it was great. Yeah, it was great. That was a wonderful experience. He wrote three characters and it was like, it's you three. And then there would be like lines we'd have to hit. But he would also really encourage us to be like, hey, just like be playful with it, you know, like, which can be really, you know, I love improv. It doesn't film well. And you can tell when you're watching a comedy movie, or at least I can tell when it's like, man, I bet this killed on set. I bet if you were there for like the full context of this on set, it was great. And then like, you know, in the cut, it just reads a little bit like, you know, wrong vibe, you know. And I think one of the things that was so great about Terriers was like the show was kind of wryly comic throughout. We weren't necessarily the comedic relief. It was more just, hey, in the world of this beachside San Diego, SoCal community, there are all these weirdos. We happen to be three of those other weirdos. And so it felt like we were able to capture certain aspects of that dynamic on camera because the world of the show was so thoughtfully crafted. We were able to slot into it easily.
That's great. Man, that show's so good.
So good.
All right, back to Farside. I've meandered too much, Berg. I'm sorry.
Hey, all good. I'm here for the meander.
Okay, good, good, good. So looking back on it now, I'm curious how you would explain how Farside was that foundation for you, for the comedian that you became. You said in the moment, you didn't necessarily think it was, you know, it was that for you, but then you were able to reflect on it when the complete edition came out. Where you are now as a human being and as a comedian, how do you look back at Farside as that piece of formative media for you?
I think the analogy I'm going to use is pretty stupid, but I hope it's effective. When people get excited about having a baked potato, they're thinking about the cheese, they're thinking about the sour cream, they're thinking about the bacon bits, they're forgetting about the potato. And I think for me, Farside is the potato. You know, it's like I've got all my fixins that I have layered on top of all this other stuff. But like, it's a real starchy, nutritious tuber, you know, like I think it's that. So, you know, I think when I was a kid, you know, obviously you're a parent, I'm a parent. It is one of the most challenging and daunting things to do as a parent, to be like, here's something I love. I hope that you love it too. And when you're a kid, people are always presenting you with these things and they sometimes just don't line up. You know, I remember my dad loves Bob Dylan. You know, he's kind of, I think, contractually obligated to by virtue of being a boomer. You know, and he would always like play me Bob Dylan when I was a kid and be like, this is good music. And part of your brain goes like, I guess I don't like music. You know, you go to New York City and be like, I guess I just hate cities, you know? And then when you get older, you're like, no, it was just this, it was just that. And Far Side was something that I don't remember anyone introducing it to me. Someone must have, you know. I remember it being every time there was a Scholastic book fair, there'd be a pile of Far Side galleries, and it was just so ubiquitous. It felt, whether or not this was the case, it felt like something I discovered on my own. And so it felt a little bit more special to me than some of these other things that have been introduced to me. In the way that I still do, like if I discover an author on my own, I feel a sense of like ownership or like kinship. Or if I hear about a band, like not because I got recommended it by Stereo Gum or Pitchfork, but because I was into another band on that same label, and then I got a label sampler and then found like one track and then discovered this whole thing. Like I feel more of a sense of ownership over that. And I think Far Side was like that for me as a kid. And I think it really shaped my sense of humor at the point in time when it was most malleable. And its shaping was so subtle and so thorough that it was invisible to me until I was like a fully formed adult.
You've mentioned some of the dinosaur ones. You have the complete edition next to you, so I don't want to put you under any more pressure. Do you have favorites now as an adult that are like, these are your go-to, these are your pulls, these are the things that you know, live rent-free in your mind? You wake up in the morning, they're always in the back of your head. Any Far Side go-tos?
Yeah, there's one I really love that I always come back to, because they also, they're, you know, there's subgenres of Far Side, right? So you got the cows, you got the cavemen, you got the dinosaurs. There's also a lot of scientists. And there's one I love so much where I don't think there's a caption. It's just one scientist like with like a hammer working on a nuclear warhead and another one behind him with an inflated paper bag, and he's clearly about to pop it to scare him. Like that really lives rent-free in my head. And there's another one, I think the caption is Trouble Brewing. And there's like a couple of these, but there's one where it's one side of the fence is like a daycare, and the other side of the fence is like a hyena farm or something like that. Like just like two neighbors that like clearly shouldn't be getting along. And then one where it's like, again, very similar template. It's a Institute for Severe Migraines, and then next door is a marching band academy. You know, like, and it's just one of the things I love about it so much is, and I think this is true of all the best comedy, but Far Side trusts you to make the punchline. And that makes it participatory in a way that I think is like really difficult in a lot of other media. And because you're the one who like a lot of Far Side is flatly funny. But like, for example, like with the one with the paper bag and the nuclear warhead, like that's a funny setup. But that's like what's really making you laugh is what happens next. And the best Far Side comics, my favorite ones, are springboards for you to fill in that gap. And I think that's part of why it was so formative for me, because it trained me to fill in that gap. And it's just great. I love it. I love it so much. I have a question for you about Far Side.
Okay.
Because part of why this was so top of mind when you asked me to come on the show was because you had mentioned that you were showing it to, I can't remember if it was both your kids or just the older one.
Just the youngest. Just the youngest.
Just the youngest. Okay, great. I'm so curious what it's been like. I haven't bothered trying to show it to my daughter. She'll just make fun of me for being old. She'll call me Unk. But I'm so curious what a younger, you know, like, I mean, I guess your kids would be what, Gen Alpha? Like, you know, is that right? Like,
I don't know if they've defined the generation yet, but yeah.
Yeah.
I have two middle schoolers, you know, one entrenched and one rising middle schooler. And my youngest, when she read this book, she got like not the complete collection, but just one of the many, you know, collected editions that they've done. And I think she, for better or worse right now, I think is a budding comedian. in the broad sense that we used the term earlier, where she has Simpsons episodes going all the time. She'll be drawing and have her favorite Simpsons episodes going in the background just to hear the pattern, hear the routine, hear the thing. Yeah. We'll be on a walk and she'll be like, oh my gosh. Like, she'll see the world through the lens of the Simpsons, the way when I was her age or a little older, I would see the world through the lens of a skate line. Like, oh, hit those stairs, yeah. Grind that curb, then do this.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, oh my gosh, if that car would have pulled out a second earlier, that would have been like Krusty doing that to Sideshow Bob. And then Homer would say, like, she sees the matrix of that. And so for the Far Side, I think it is that participatory nature of it that she really enjoys because she is part of the joke. And so those are her favorite. And I don't know if I would have put that together until you called it out that way. The other side of it, though, is that it is also reliving my trauma with it, where she, as a rising middle schooler, will be like, Dad, I don't get this one. And she'll show it to me and I'll be like, neither do I. Oh, neither do I.
That's so funny.
So she has to play with that idea of her dad doesn't know everything. Also that, you know, not all comedy is for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's been fun/traumatic. Thanks for asking. There are so many parts to being a parent that I absolutely love. Truthfully, I pretty much love all of it. What a gift. But man, that thing that Berg hits on regarding sharing something you love with someone you love, someone you helped bring into the world, is such a fun but stress-filled moment. It's like middle school or high school all over again. Will this person think this thing is cool? Will they be into it too? Oh gosh, I hope they think I'm cool too. Even though being a parent isn't about being friends with your kid, I think those are two different things. But still, check out this band. They're called Blink 182. What do you think? On that note, one more ad break before we get back to Berg and the Far Side. We'll be right back.
Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Another aspect of Far Side I wanted to get your thoughts on, as it being your baked potato and all, is the idea of the comedy of restraint, or the art in restraint, where Far Side is this single panel comic. And I'm curious your thoughts on how something like that might be freeing or might be debilitating at times, but this idea of comedy under severe constraints and how that can maybe heighten the experience for folks.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing I always go back to with the notion of constraints and any creative endeavor is the White Stripes. You know, Jack and Meg White, two-piece ensemble, basically we're just going guitar and drums, what can we do? And it becomes a thing where you start saying, well, based on what I have, what can I do with this? As opposed to saying, well, what do I want to do? And then reverse engineering what you need to get it done. It's a little scrappier in some ways.
I love Berg's pull of the White Stripes here for an example of limitations in creativity. For me, my mind always goes back to Nintendo. There's this idea attributed to Gunpei Yokai at Nintendo, this idea of lateral thinking with withered technology. The fact that Nintendo is creative, but not necessarily pushing technology to the fullest. There's a book from Lost and Colt called A Handheld History, and it kind of talks about this as it relates to the Game Boy. These words are by Lewis Parker in that book, and I love the way he talks about this idea of being creative within limitations. And I'm going to read a little bit of it here. Those withered attributes are the shackles that act as the mother of invention. Art is often enhanced by restrictions. Untethered creative freedom with limitless possibilities and no form of guidelines, boundaries, or requirements can often be a recipe for unfocused, unoptimized, and frankly, unremarkable results. It's a common misconception that the heart of imagination lies in sheer autonomy, when in reality, a set of parameters can lead us towards more enlightened conclusions. The solutions to the barriers we have to work around end up becoming art unto themselves, adding layers and a sense of cohesion to what we manifest. Love that.
And with the Far Side and the constraint of it being a single panel, I view it as freeing. And I think part of why I'm viewing it at this moment in time in 2026 is, you know, for my day job, I work for a YouTube channel called New Rockstars. We cover a lot of nerdy movies and stuff. And we've been doing a rewatch of the MCU, which is the opposite of a single panel comic, right? Like it's a series of interwoven stories across TV and film over the course of, you know, almost two decades at this point. And when it works really well. But at this point in Marvel's life cycle, you're starting to see the ways in which it doesn't work and the ways in which it can be a little bit more constraining. And with Far Side, I think you really do get like, it's a fresh start every time. That might not be your preference for comedy. That's fine. You know, your mileage may vary. And comparing it to something like Calvin and Hobbes, where it's like, I love Calvin and Hobbes. It's just different. You know, Calvin has a relationship with Susie Durkins that like you can draw on and use as a shorthand for a panel with Susie Durkins, even if you haven't seen her in 3 months, you know, or with Mo or with his mom, you know, like there's Spaceman Spiff, you know, like there's all this stuff in Calvin and Hobbes that you can kind of come back to. And if you've read the earlier stuff, you have a little bit more context. And if you haven't, you can still enjoy it on its own. It becomes self-referential, right? Far Side is a little bit more in the tradition of something like Crazy Cat, which was at the time, a huge comic strip series in, I want to say like the 20s and 30s by George Harriman. But Crazy Cat kind of only had three characters, and they kind of did the same thing every comic. Like it was always Crazy Cat has a crush on Ignatz Mouse. Ignatz Mouse hates Crazy Cat, just wants to hit Crazy Cat with a brick. Crazy Cat interprets that as a sign of affection. Officer Pup has a crush on Crazy Cat, tries to prevent Crazy Cat from getting hit by a brick. Crazy Cat doesn't like Officer Pup because of that. You know, and that very simple engine kind of kept things going, but it was always fundamentally a fresh start on that. It wasn't like, well, because Mouse did this last week, you know, whatever. And so I think one of the things that I've come to appreciate about Far Side in this kind of very over heavily franchised era of media that we live in is it's kind of a simpler time. Like a joke can just be a joke. A character can just be a character. It doesn't need to be the start of a franchise. It doesn't need to be a reboot. It doesn't need to be a sequel. It's not asking for a sequel. It's just existing on its own. If you like it, great. If you want more of it, read it again. You know, but it's not, it's actively antithetical to this kind of very modern sensibility of, you know, Obsession, I believe, hits digital platforms this week. Great movie. But you can feel all the studios going, well, now what's our obsession? Meaning, what's our movie we made for nothing that makes us a lot of money? But they have to frame it as, well, what's our like elevating a young creator? It's like, shut up. We know, you know, it's like in the same way that all the TV studios just wanted their quote unquote Always Sunny. It's like, you don't actually care about making a sitcom where what's really funny is it's a singular and unique comedic voice. You care about buying something for a dollar and making $1 million off of that purchase. And Far Side, for as much as it was so heavily merchandised and everything, it really was always just about, this one joke is funny enough, I would like to wear it on a t-shirt. You know, like I like this so much, I want to see it every laundry cycle. You know, yeah. Like, and I love that about it. I really love that about it.
Okay. I like to end the show, every show, with a quote. And it can be something from the thing we've been talking about. It could be something silly. Every morning I wake up with a song in my head. And I don't mean that to mean like I get up and my alarm goes off. It's like, I can't not. It's a sickness. I don't know what song it's going to be. I get up for past few weeks. It's been Shaboozy. I wake up and Shaboozy is just in my head. I don't know why.
So that'd be the quote that lives rent-free in my head is, oh gosh, what, I can't even get it right now. It's talking about his driving his SRT real fast. Like, when I get going fast, no one can catch me. And I can't say it right now, but I guarantee you when I wake up tomorrow morning, I'll have that, or I'm the last of my kind, just in my head, start my day. I say all that to say, it can be anything and everything. Do you have a quote that you can't shake right now, or something that is inspirational, anything for you?
Oh man, it's so funny because the first thing that comes to mind is the opposite of inspirational. let me see. I'm trying to go through, like, do I fish for another quote, or do I honestly?
Okay, yeah. Own the one. Yeah.
Okay, great. So there's a band I love. Only band I have a tattoo of, this hardcore band called Up, who from Canada. They've been going for like 20 years. At this point, I would basically call them prog rock. They're just so wonderfully weird and out there. And they have a rock opera called David Comes to Life. I think it came out in like 2010, 2012, somewhere in that era. And it's fundamentally like a romance gone wrong. And in the middle of the rock opera, there's a song, I think the song's called Serves Me Right, where the lead singer says, maybe it was my fault and I deserve to be upset. Maybe the price of being wrong is a lifetime of regret. And like, that's the quote that echoes in my head, which is so funny because, like, I don't really, saying that's the quote that echoes in my head makes it sound like I'm going around every day going like, I fucked up, you know, like, and that's not sort of my day-to-day vibe, but like, that's the one that immediately comes to mind. We're like, what's a quote? And I'm like, oh, this fucking thing. We're like, yeah, you fucked up. Now sit in your it's, you know, but anyways, go listen to F***ed Up. Year of the Monkey is fantastic. Just came out a month ago. It's great.
Well, if my mind's a weapon, Berg,
my heart's your heart's the extra clip. Yeah. Beautiful.
Formative Media was created and is hosted by me, Christian Spicer. Thanks to Berg for joining us. You can catch Berg performing long-form improv with his group Convoy, where they also live stream their shows and then later upload most of them to YouTube as well. But still, if you can, go see them live. And there's a newer channel on the New Rockstars Network called The Break Room, where you can catch Berg breaking down some of the week's nerdy news. Check it out. Okay, that's the show. A show made by real people for you. Our amazing opening theme song was made by Tim McEwen. Our podcast album art photograph was taken by Jordan Epstein. So many thanks to AJ Filari for all the editing. And of course, thank you for listening. You can support the show and make sure it continues by going to patreon.com/formativemediashow. And you can contact us at formativemediashow@gmail.com. Until next time, live the moments you'll be nostalgic for later. Thanks for listening.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.